6 o'clock.
Blog Talk Radio.
And this is Sunday, so it must be the Sunday show. I'm here live. This is Gwen Berry. I'm here live with Jack Jodell. Hi, Jack. How you doing today?
Well, I'm doing fine, battling a cold, but I'll survive, and we just got to keep pressing forward no matter what, right?
Yeah, you got that one straight on. Shout out to the chat room. We got John O'Brien in there listening to us today.
Hi, John.
Hey, John, how you doing? Remember, John, our call-in number is 213-816-0357. And if you want to give us a call in, we're taking calls today for conversation and commentary. It's been a hell of a week. And I don't know if any of you folks out there follow Burr Deming and his Fair and Unbalanced blog. That's the name of it, isn't it, Jack?
Yes, and it's brilliant writing. He's a very creative thinker, and he's a very deep thinker, too. And I don't know how he manages it, but he puts a new post up every single day, and they're all equally great. So it's worth a visit if you've never been there, fairandunbalanced.com.
Wow. Well, you know, I get over there once in a blue moon. I used to go over, and I get so lost in those pages, but I'll tell you, you'll find one here and there that'll really capture your interest and get you going. Now, he has begun to put out these weekly blurbs on SoundCloud of spoken commentary. This one he sent us today is on the Voting Rights Act and what's going on currently in the country. At the 50-year pinpoint from MLK's march, it comes to bear. So I'll go ahead and play it, shall I?
Yeah, sounds great. Let's listen to it. It's good listening. He presents it very well and very succinctly, too.
Okay, let me get it going.
This is Burr Deming, along with our virtual fictitious assistant.
That would be me.
At fairandunbalanced.com, discussing voting rights, Texas, and sunshine.
The time has arrived in America for the Democratic Party to get out of the shadows of states' rights and to walk forthrightly into the bright sunshine of human rights.
That was the Democratic National Convention. The voice arguing for civil rights was that of Hubert Humphrey, mayor of Minneapolis, Minnesota, on July 14, 1948.
The Democratic Convention in Philadelphia in 1948 had become contentious. The liberal faction wanted the party to declare an important principle. Civil rights, including the right to vote, should be a national standard.
The conservative faction regarded human rights as a state matter. Don't tell us how to treat our people.
Strom Thurmond, the governor of South Carolina, had already put the issue of states' rights in more colorful terms.
There's not enough troops in the army to force the
southern
people
to break down segregation and admit the Negroes into our theaters, into our swimming pools, into our homes, and into our churches.
That was Strom Thurmond, governor of South Carolina, during the Dixiecrat campaign of 1948.
The liberal contingent managed a narrow victory at the Democratic Convention.
The Democratic Party was on record.
Human rights, the right to be served in restaurants, to attend schools, the right to vote was a national standard. It ought to be enforced by national laws.
Strom Thurmond and delegates from several states walked away from the Democratic Party.
They held an alternate convention in Birmingham, Alabama.
Human rights were a state concern. Moves to nationalize the rights of minorities comprised a form of totalitarianism.
16 years later, the 1964 call by the Democratic Party for strong civil rights and voting rights began the great migration of conservatives to a more accommodating Republican Party.
That same voting rights law was declared to be partially unconstitutional this year by the Supreme Court.
They struck down the requirement that some sections of the country with an unfortunate history of human rights violations had to pre-clear changes in voting practices to be sure minority rights were protected.
But the court left intact another procedure, a harder one to follow.
If enough proof could be presented, a state or parts of a state could be put back into the preclearance requirement. It just had to be proven that voting practices were deliberately intended to discriminate. The courts would decide. So the Attorney General of the United States announced that the Department of Justice will file in court to do just that.
The first target would be the state of Texas.
More than most states, Texas has been forthright in trying to keep a significant minority population from voting and from having their votes count for as much if they do vote.
A series of measures have been passed by the state to make it harder for Hispanic voters to actually vote.
And more than most states, Texas has established a documented record of deliberate motivation. Legislators are very much on record as specifically wanting to keep Hispanic voters from voting.
They are indeed being targeted by the state.
They are also being targeted to keep those candidates Hispanic voters might want from actually taking office. Extreme redistricting is the very first practice to be challenged.
Lines are drawn that go against well-established legal standards for compactness and common interest.
In this case, the Department of Justice is pushing for more than just overturning bad districting lines. The Department of Justice also wants to get courts to put Texas back on the preclearance list.
Texas has put in draconian photo ID laws. Those with driver's licenses need not worry. They're grandfathered in.
Those who walk or ride the bus to work will be required to get new alternate IDs. Offices issuing such IDs have been moved away from Hispanic areas. Their hours have been reduced. Documentation that will be demanded in order to qualify for the new IDs has gotten to absurd levels, way beyond mere proof of identity.
What provides the heart of the Department of Justice brief is evidence of motivation.
Texas legislators have recorded phone calls, written letters, sent emails, and otherwise generated a paper trail that pretty much proves they just wanted to keep Hispanic voters from voting.
Or from electing those they want to elect.
Texas has responded with one of the strangest arguments a court will be likely to hear for a while. They filed their own brief, arguing that discrimination against Hispanic voters should be allowed if it's purely for political reasons.
If Hispanic voters are denied the right to vote for the folks they want because legislators hate Hispanics, that is wrong. But if Hispanic voters are denied the right to vote for the folks they want because legislators want to keep them from electing Democrats, that's okay.
Senator John Cornyn, Republican of Texas, has issued a bitter denunciation of the Department of Justice and President Obama. His statement essentially echoes part of the old Strom Thurmond plank about the right of each state to determine which minorities will be allowed to vote. These are his words.
As Texans, we reject the notion that the federal government knows what's best for us. We deserve the freedom to make our own laws, and we deserve not to be insulted by a Justice Department committed to scoring cheap political points. That's Senator John Cornyn, Republican of Texas, on August 22, 2013.
This new assertion of the right of a state to deal with minority rights however they want, with no fear of interference, does not carry the same fire as Strom Thurmond's old speeches. But the surrender of human rights in favor of states' rights is identical. We don't need to wonder what the Hubert Humphrey or Strom Thurmond of 65 years ago would say about this year's controversy. They would recognize what we should recognize. If we side with Humphrey, we should know that Texas politicians are determined to avoid the bright sunshine, finding comfort in those dirt-filled, shadowy corners he urged us to reject.
Get out of the shadows of states' rights and to walk forthrightly into the bright sunshine of human rights.
This is Burr Deming, along with our virtual fictitious assistant.
That would be me.
At fairandunbalanced.com.
There is a brilliant man taking advantage of the latest in technology to create iPod broadcasts to support in conjunction with his regularly published blog. A fabulous man, and he's been on our program. It's been quite a while, but he's been on occasion too, so we invite him back, obviously. But I'm always impressed by what he has to say. I think he has a good point there, especially this is a good time for this to air in view of the fact that so many people are in Washington this weekend to commemorate the 50th anniversary of Martin Luther King's Washington March address, which was a monumental address.
I'd love to. It was beautifully produced. He's doing a good job, and he's made it a point to send it on to us so that we might give him some play, and I'm happy to do so. He is a more conservative with his political.
More mainstream Democrat, I guess, but he's got a nice liberal bent that always comes through. He's very accommodating to conservatives. He's truly a gentleman. He really is, and he gives them a little bit too much play in his blog. But you know that's his blog, and he can do with it as he likes.
And it's well done, and I
very well done.
Place with him. I don't always agree, but I think he does a really good job, and it's always very fair. And I like his little blasts. They're well produced.
Mm-hmm.
No complaints at all there. And, you know, I was going to go on to something else, and I forgot when I went about that one. Isn't that always fun?
You were going to put on some Dennis Traynor today as well.
I am. Here's what I wanted to say. Tonight on, I know most folks have got, especially if you're listening online and live, you've got the cable or the standard cable on MSNBC at, I think it's 12 a.m. this evening, which goes into Monday. They replay Meet the Press late at night.
Mm-hmm.
And today's Meet the Press was a real treat because it was a replay of the interview done 3 days prior to the I Have a Dream speech.
Mm-hmm.
With Martin Luther King.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Very telling. It was a very telling show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we got a really great question from David. David, of course, is in the chat room. Hello, David. Thanks for stopping by.
Hi, David.
He asks, what would MLK say about Obama? And he suspects nothing good. I have to agree with that. Of course I would. But, you know, I do have to agree with that.
I think he would have his issues with him, no doubt about that. Keep in mind, MLK ended up, working closely with the LBJ, and he, out of respect for JFK, and he understood the politics that were involved. He still kept pressing forward, though. He allowed JFK to not be as active as he could have been.
Every point that Martin Luther King made about war, about poverty, about the disenfranchising of poor people and the community,
mm-hmm.
every one of these things has been a highlight of opposition to the Obama White House.
I would agree with that.
he's sided with Wall Street. I mean, I think I've met and I know MLK3, his
mm-hmm.
son,
mm-hmm.
who's a very kind man.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He would never say anything bad about, especially any African American politician, unless he thought they were terrible.
Right.
But even MLK3 has made a few disparaging remarks about the kind of warmonger that this president is and how shocking it seems.
Well, you know, the thing is, MLK, his grandfather, made it a point. He was concerned with racial equality, but he was really overall concerned with economic justice for the American people, for
right.
workers, and especially for the poor. And this has been abandoned by the Democratic Party, the mainstream Democratic Party.
Okay.
And it's a tragedy because that used to be their power base. Now they've gotten corporate under Bill Clinton and so forth. They've gotten very corporate oriented, and they're accepting favors from Wall Street. And, you know, they've become very tarnished in the process. And well, I think MLK today would be very upset about that occurrence, and he'd be upset with Obama on that in that regard, I'm sure of that. Plus the fact that we're continuing the Bush-Cheney war, using Bush-Cheney tactics for the most part, that we've watered down slightly, but not good enough.
Yes, we're getting the same applause and citing in the chat room. I think that if MLK were walking and talking right now, he would have been one of the people sitting in Zuccotti Park. And I want to bring that up for good reason, because on September 17th, it's the anniversary of Occupy Wall Street. And I think we have to remember Wall Street, Occupy Wall Street.
Oh, yeah.
And bring that kind of enthusiasm back to activism and getting it going again, just banging the drum. I'm rainmaking. Ooh, I don't know, but that's our job here on the air to
bang
the drum. And so I say, remember Occupy Wall Street. If you're Occupy, our Occupy group a couple of months ago sort of dissolved. It just wasn't meeting anymore. And yet, if there was a resurgence of Occupy Wall Street, if they went and they took Zuccotti Park again, bless their hearts, you know, I think they'd probably get three times the people. And I think they would probably get, some more news support at the beginning of it, because it would be one of those things where the mainstream media would love to crow about, isn't this ridiculous kind of thing. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. They're pathetic. We already know that. You know, it served one good purpose. It opened up a lot of eyes and it got a lot of people thinking. And its after effects have been felt in various layers of the economy and in various cities across the country, where this activism has propelled itself into other areas, into saving people from being thrown out of their houses here in Minneapolis, for one thing, and other cities as well. And, it's led to a huge new awareness of the way things really are in Oakland and all across the West there. And it isn't dead. It's still happening. It's just muted somewhat.
If it hadn't been for the Occupy group in New York, the people who suffered so under Sandy would have been, there would have been death from lack of heat, lack of food, lack of care. But Occupy stood there. We have a caller. I'm going to bring him online. Hello, caller, 708 area code. This is Gwen.
Hey, Gwen. Hello? It's John O'Brien.
Hi, John.
Hi, John. How are you?
Jack, how you doing, buddy?
Good, man. Good to hear from you.
Yeah, I finally decided to call in.
Well, we're glad to have you. Sounds good. What's on your mind today, John?
Well, you guys were talking about the Civil Rights Acts, and I live in Chicago, and for the last 3 months, we've been dealing with a situation that kind of amazes me in the fact that a lot of the black community is rallying against the Homosexual Rights Acts that Illinois is now trying to pass, legalize gay marriage, and so forth. And it amazes me that they let religion play such a huge role in this, that they don't see it as a civil rights act in and of itself.
That is, that's interesting and distressing as well.
It's an organizing from that, you know, a lot of the organizing that goes on in neighborhoods and communities, especially the groups that have been there for so long, since the 50s and 60s, came out of a lot of churches. And I think that's where you're seeing the strains of this come from, is established patterns of the churches, the Baptist community and all of that.
Oh, yes, yeah.
Yeah, very heavy Baptist.
It's a shame because not all Baptists are like that.
Right.
And not all, it's just as David is saying, conservative Baptists, and not all African American communities are bent towards anti-gay either.
Right, right.
So that,
you know,
yeah,
you've got to be careful about
realize.
Generalizing, because not all Catholics are pedophiles either. So, you know, we've got to be very careful when we generalize, and that's important to make that distinction.
It amazes me that the black community in Chicago would be against homosexual rights just for the simple fact of what they dealt with 50, 60 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
It really just puzzles me.
Yeah, it's paradoxical almost, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very strange.
Yeah. Huh.
Well, you know, there's a couple of sayings we could fall back on here. Everything old is new again. But, you know, to the winners go the spoils. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It sounds like Chicago is also getting pistol whipped from its higher offices of governorship there. This mayor is just...
Gwen, Chicago's a mess.
Mm.
We could dedicate an entire one-hour show to Chicago, and
yeah.
I wouldn't shut up. The politics in this city are amazing.
Yeah, I guess Rahm's really stirred up the jug there, huh?
Rahm is probably the worst mayor we have ever seen.
Oh,
and
boy.
The biggest problem... But this is what's amazing. I'm sure it probably works like this in other countries with major cities like L.A., New York, and so forth. But one of the big things that was happening in Chicago last year is Illinois legislation was trying to pass a gaming bill because, of course, our state's kind of going broke.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Rahm Emanuel was trying very hard to get a casino in Chicago. Chicago does not have a casino.
Mm-hmm.
And the governor vetoed it. He said, absolutely not. So now,
mm-hmm.
Mayor Emanuel, I think it's Bill Daley, who took over Emanuel's job in Obama's cabinet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He's now running for the Democratic ticket for the governorship against our Democratic governor. And there's no doubt in my mind, it's due, you know, Rahm didn't get his casino, he's pissed. And
yeah,
it's amazing how much one city could run an entire state.
Oh, yeah. Well,
that's how
it's historically always been the case there, hasn't it? It's just like
Hall
ran
New
York politics.
Even from the dailies, it's been the same old song and dance.
Oh, yeah.
You've got a real nasty mofo on your mayor's office there. I think Rahm Emanuel is one of the worst that's ever come. You talk about your boss tweed. I mean, yeah.
He's very autocratic. He's very intense. He's very intolerant, I think, in many ways. He wants everything his way.
Yeah, oh, very much so. Very much so. And even from his first bidding to be mayor,
mm-hmm.
it was unreal. He promised... You know, at the time, Chicago was going through a huge crime spree, which only
mm-hmm.
grew. And at the time, he promised, you know, 500 or 1,000 new CPS officers,
mm-hmm.
which he didn't deliver on. Instead of doing that, he cut out specialized units of the Chicago Police Department and put those guys on beats in the worst neighborhoods, in the gang-ridden neighborhoods.
Mm.
But when he did that, like, he cut out the gang intelligence division. He cut it by half.
Wow.
He took half of those officers to put them on beat patrol.
Uh-huh.
The guy's awful. And then he went after the teachers' union with the CPS.
Oh.
When the CPS, I mean,
yeah.
I can't believe this
that.
Guy has a D at the end of his name. It's
yeah.
unreal.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it is. Controversial is the least word we can use.
And
he's awful.
This is the hometown of the President of the United States, and
right.
in a couple of years he'll be returning to this hometown. Won't it be nice if he can pick up some spare change from whatever casinos are in town?
Yeah, I don't know. I have a completely different mindset on our president, and that's
mm-hmm.
only because I saw the stuff he did when he was here.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't vote for him either term. Only because I knew, I just had a feeling he'd be a bad president. I mean, Hillary Clinton would have been better getting the Democratic nomination because he's just very inexperienced. He was when he was a state senator. He was when he was a United States senator.
That's a good point. That's a good point you raised there. And it's cost him politically in getting his agenda passed. You know, he barely got the Affordable Health Care passed, and even that is a flawed bill, you know.
Well, the Affordable Health Care Act, which I've heard you guys talk about, you know, since I started listening, due to my good friend Wayne.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's an asinine act. I will never understand. If you want to do that, why don't you just go to Medicare? Everyone's on Medicare.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
I mean, you either go balls out or you don't go at all.
Well,
I mean, it just seems like he put so much
what
right
my objection
everything.
To it is that he put everybody in need of an insurance company.
Right.
We have insurance companies doing this stuff. We should have the federal government taking care of it.
Jack, I was listening to Tom Hartman's show one day, and there was a guy on there, a healthcare expert, that brought up just a ridiculous stat that made my eyes roll.
Mm-hmm.
Medicaid runs at 3% overhead.
Right.
You know, like the governmental aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the private medical insurance company runs at 20%.
I know,
overhead.
It's disgusting. We're spending all that money just to keep these big CEOs in big salaries, and it's foolish.
It just bewilders me.
And
the
health
care
is no better as a result. It's, in some ways, it may even be worse.
Yeah, and the other thing that amazes me is just the people in this country, like, not only conservatives, but liberals as well. Like, I just don't understand it. And what really opened my eyes to it is my brother-in-law recently moved to Canada. He got his PhD from Purdue, and he was a professor at the University of San Diego for three years.
Mm-hmm.
Now last year he got a job at McGill. And so I've been finding out how all their taxation and everything works.
Mm-hmm.
They're taxed at 40%.
Mm-hmm.
20% federal for the Canadian government and 20% provincial, which is like our state.
Right.
But he told me, and this made me just like laugh and cry at the same time. He went to their DMV to get his license, their immigration office to get his work visa. Then he went to their equivalent of their Social Security office, and then their health care like office or whatever would be to get his national health care card.
Mm-hmm.
He did all this in 2.5 hours.
Mm, isn't that incredible?
I don't know how it is in
well,
Florida
we've been
or Minnesota,
brainwashed into
but
believing
if you go
that...
to the DMV in Chicago, pack a lunch.
Oh, I know, yeah. You know, I'll tell you what. We've been brainwashed into believing that the Canadian system is bad, it's cumbersome, it's inefficient, it doesn't deliver good health care. We've been brainwashed a lot of bullshit by the health care industry and the insurance industry here in the States.
I think we've been brainwashed to believe that socialism is a bad word.
Exactly.
That's what
I agree
with
you there. I agree with
where
you.
Where the more I'm starting to read and the more I'm kind of evolving politically, I don't think it is.
I don't either.
Because the system we have now is broken.
It's corrupt.
Capitalism has failed, guys. Capitalism has failed.
It only serves the very wealthy, and that's all it does.
But,
exactly.
You know, I've lived and worked for months at a time in socialist-dominant states like Denmark and Norway. And I have to tell you, there's rich people there and middle-class people there, but you do not see extreme poverty like you do here.
I got a funny story about that, Gwen.
You don't see children starving. You don't see people in the streets.
Mm-hmm.
You don't. I mean, there might be a few people in Copenhagen but they choose to live that way mostly because they have mental problems or...
Right.
Eat care that way, and they won't.
You don't
get.
See them out begging. You don't see them out drunk at night on the sidewalk.
No, more so, you'll see them giving money away and having a drink with whoever will sit down and drink with them. No,
right.
It's a lot different over there, and I'll tell you what, the health is part of the environment, too. The first thing I noticed, the first time I I flew into Jutland, and you come out of that airport, the big old Lego toy company is on one side, and on the other side it opens onto countryside, and you begin to drive, and I'll tell you what, I finally figured out what was so strange about that drive. There was no litter. There was no trash anywhere.
Well, they've developed a real sense of community, and they know that it's not good for the city or the community to have shit laying around in everybody's way.
Right.
They've got a social conscience that we can only dream of having here in this country.
Yeah, but you know,
yeah.
Our community.
A unity.
Yes, a unity.
Look at New York City. You get neighborhoods in New York that pull themselves up by their bootstraps, and they create gardens out of lots. I mean, if you give people the inspiration and you give them just a bit of help and guidance, they will create community big time, and they'll sustain it. And that's what we've got to go to, is local sustainability really what we have to go to. John talks about how he's evolving politically. I have to tell you, my thoughts in the last 8 years have switched back so much, and I have learned so much in the last 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I no longer think that borders and nationalism are good for this planet at all. I know lots of people who 6 years ago would have been happy to dedicate themselves to a good candidate and work for something better for this country, who no longer see that way either. They see this as a planetary, you know, we're one people and one world, because that's how sick and how despoiled and how needy our planet is right now. People who sell these. People who go out and bother to find out what's going on in the world, like the truth about Fukushima, or the truth about the oil leaks, or fracking, or any of this. People are changing their minds. They're no longer with knowledge is a powerful thing.
In my opinion, the reason that a global unity will never work is quite simply religion.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I mean, now, you know, Wayne makes fun of me all the time because I'm so young. I'm only 37, so I haven't lived through a lot of the political stuff you guys did.
Yeah.
You know, the first president I ever voted for was Clinton in his second term.
Yeah. Well, you have tremendous insights, John, and I applaud you for that. That's great.
But I'm also agnostic. And, you know, raised in an Irish Protestant family. And the problem I have that I see is what I feel open-minded is that religion's just nuts. And not that it's wrong or, you know, it's bad to have faith in something, but when you start putting your religious ideals against somebody else's religious ideals in the way that, you know, I have a Jewish friend who just hates Arabs and hates Muslims. It adds tension.
It actually
crazy.
Divides people rather than unites.
It does.
People.
Well, you know, guys, I got to tell you, I agree with you, John, and a lot of people look twice and, oh, but you're into, you know, all that spiritual. Yeah, I am. I'm a spiritual woman. I'm not a religious woman.
Mm-hmm.
I do not that putting my power, or any of us putting our power outside of ourselves into the other, call it God, you could even call it goddess, you, whoever, a Mohammed or Buddha or any of it, that's not going to work. But I think, too, that with all the that our communities are beginning to really come up with, I mean, because of all of the disease of the planet, I think folks are going to start to give up that kind of tunnel vision. I don't know how to put it in a way.
Well,
that,
I think Gwen, what you're saying is you freed yourself of the the cumbersomeness of the institutional aspects, whereby the apparatus or the institution takes control and dictates the way things will be, and that's where we run into so many problems. It helps them administer their groups and all that stuff and their resources, but at the same time, it's very self-defeating, if you will, because it limits them from really reaching out and really helping as many people as they possibly could.
Well, you know, what it's going to come down to is love your mother, Mother Earth.
Yeah, right.
The other thing, too, is that basically what's really terribly wrong right now is that the machine that we rage against is really basically, on a global level, a war machine.
Oh,
you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's a constant bang, 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 honka, honka, honka.
It feeds on destruction. It doesn't construct.
That's right. And people are getting hip because their children are getting sick. But there's also this, too, with the radiation that's in the air and in the water and in the ground now and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
We're at a turning point, you know. This is, Age of Aquarius, a brand new astro year. It's also, I think, the point of evolution for humanity and many other species on this planet. And I think that it's happening simply through the radiated mutations that are going on. I mean, come on, just take a look at that. Don't even have to look at how the birth rates have taller children with more brain turned on, that kind of thing, 20-something years. But,
the rising rates of cancers and all sorts of things.
Right, but there's also going to come a point of, you know, there's mutation going on. There's mutation going on in you and me right now. We got Chernobyl in us. We got Fukushima in it.
Sure, yeah.
You know, and if
very true.
Dr. Caldecott is correct, we could have a lot more Fukushima in us than we realize. And
yeah, that could very well be true.
Now, I hate to say it, but I've only kind of gotten into the whole climate thing recently.
Mm-hmm.
That's only because I always had a weird take on it.
Mm.
I've always looked at it as a scientific thing. And in high school and the 1 year of college I took, I was always interested in the earth sciences. And I've always felt that the planet was just a living thing.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, all living things will die.
Mm-hmm.
So when people, progressives or conservatives, start talking about, oh, global warming, this, oh, that's not true, whatever, I just kind of don't even pay attention. But now
I'm
starting to look at
it. It's a debate that is raging.
9 years ago, my daughter was born.
Mm-hmm.
And what really concerned me was women's menstrual cycle.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to sound funny and strange and maybe a little hooky. Concerned me that girls were starting to have get their menstrual cycles as early as like 9.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I mean, like, since the day my daughter was born, I wouldn't let her drink anything but bottled water.
Mm-hmm.
I'm only starting to kind of get into the whole climate.
Well,
you know,
I think,
destruction.
John, the more you do, the more alarmed you will become. But I think you'll become aware of there are alternatives, and I think you've already begun to practice some of those.
Jack, back in 2002, I traded in my Dodge Ram, 2500 for a Chevy Cavalier.
Uh-huh.
But that was kind of selfish, though, I'll admit. You know, gas was going up, to $1.80. I didn't want to pay that much.
Yeah, no, I understand. Well, some of these things, changes we are forced to make by economics and by our environment, and others are of our own volition, our own choice. But regardless, there's a better way. There's always a better way, and there's always an incorrect way. So we just have to take care to do as much as we can.
There's always a better way, but it always seems like money wins out.
Well, it
always
seems
like money
wins
out.
Yeah.
I was actually introduced to this concept by Mr. Johnson, who's on this radio show quite often.
Yeah,
and
right.
I text back and forth with him. I talk with him on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
We met through his blog, actually.
Yeah,
and through
great.
A man with the mud rake.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
He introduced me to hydrogen cars. Because my
yeah.
whole thing with the electric car was how expensive they were.
Right, right.
I mean, I've done work in Chevy dealerships. I'm a union construction worker.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah.
you know, like the Chevy Volt, it's amazing to me how expensive it is. It's almost, for a middle-class person nowadays,
it's
not affordable.
Right, right. Yeah.
But then he introduced me to the hydrogen concept, and I read about it. I looked
mm-hmm.
it up. I clicked on all the links he sent me through email, and I was amazed.
Mm-hmm.
It's
well,
funny.
That's definitely a viable alternative.
There, you know, the climate change argument shouldn't be an argument. There's definitely a phenomenon going on. It's
no
actually
it.
Going on throughout the solar system right now. I mean, if you talk to an astronomer or an astrophysicist, they will tell you that this is going on throughout our solar system. So there's something of a phenomenal cycle happening also at the same time. Mankind's greed right now is just thumping this whole thing out of proportion and bringing us to an edge of change. There's going to be change.
And what do you think that is? Why do you think that is, Gwen? I think it's rich people just think, you know, I'm worth $500 million. I don't give a shit what happens in 100 years. I won't be alive.
Yeah, very true. Very short-sighted.
I don't think that all people with bank accounts think that way. I do think that there are a few people who hold, you know, that 1% that hold great
mm-hmm.
of money who think that they can make anything happen with it. And they're not...
Well, it goes to their head.
They push it off to the side or they have another plan for it. Oh, who knows? But
I don't think that's true. And the reason I don't think that's true is because my one brother, you know, I have one brother, two sisters. My brother's very wealthy. He's
mm-hmm.
he's a Mitt Romney 1%er. He actually has a merger and acquisition firm in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
But through him, I've met many of his clients who he calls liquid. These people are rich.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm talking 500 million, a billion, and to
mm-hmm.
them it's just a game.
Yeah,
it's they've got so much money. It's now just a board game of Monopoly,
mm-hmm.
which has always amazed me with middle class like conservatives
mm-hmm.
about we shouldn't raise taxes and we shouldn't do this because they just want to win.
They want to be those people. And they think they don't want any impediments keeping them from getting there. That's the whole problem.
Well,
you
right,
know,
but what I'm saying is I can't see the ultra-wealthy wanting to spend any money on helping any of mankind because in
right.
the end, they just want to win.
Yeah, they don't give a shit.
You know,
they want to win as cheaply as possible.
John, listen, I see your point. I know what you're saying. And you're right. The way that people think that have so much liquidity has shifted. Not all of them are like that, but it has shifted, especially with people who are in this stock, in trading to make their money and in real estate.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I have the strangest feeling that that's going to collapse on them. They're going to be left without, you know, shit
mm-hmm.
or bonus or whatever you want to say. I do know this, that many other people still have what I would regard as a standard of caring for the community because the community gave them what they have. Not everybody who has money or comes out of money is a bastard, you know?
Well,
mm-hmm.
and that's how my brother is, Gwen. I mean, he put himself through college.
Yeah.
He became a stockbroker. And
yeah.
then he quit that to start a trucking company with my father. And then that
mm-hmm.
went south, and he went back into that sort of business. And he's made a good life for himself. And he was all for Obama. You know, he loved Obama. You know, his whole opinion was, you know, we live in the richest, most powerful nation in the world. There's no excuse that not a single person that lives in this country shouldn't have health care.
Mm-hmm.
Even though under Obamacare, there's still going to be 22 million people that don't.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is that he's almost so far removed. Because another idea he has is the Social Security issue. His easy fix for that is people should work till they're 75. Because
no,
the average life expectancy now has risen 20 years, 25 years since Social Security was incepted. And I asked him, who's going to hire me?
Yeah,
who's
going
to hire a 74-year-old tile setter?
Right,
nobody.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Like,
he's got to be practical about it.
The dumbest idea I've ever seen in I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah, he's got to be practical. He's not looking at the practicality of it.
Right. But he doesn't see it. He just doesn't see it.
Well, right.
He's got sort of a euphoria going on. This euphoria, and as an all euphoria, like Rome before us, you know. And well, who was it? Was it Nero who fiddled?
Nero, yeah.
Well, we've got a capital, and all those state buildings filled with Neros who are just fiddling right now. They're fiddling.
Exactly. Good analogy.
And it's going on in Capitol buildings all across the Western civilized world. And that includes Australia and New Zealand because they're just as bad. I mean, there's fracking down there. You know, one of Australia's biggest exports is rich uranium. You know what that is?
Sure.
It's basically, and my God, those lands are so gorgeous, so beautiful down there. And America, what a stunning country this is. I mean, you get out of the urban areas where you can see the urban pile up and the filth and all of that, which can be easily restored, you know.
I live in it.
You go out across this country. And you drive it, and oh my gosh! Oh, it's a
The rich farmlands, the beautiful vistas.
Well, the rich farmlands. We don't know how rich that soil is anymore. If David was on, he could probably tell us a little more about that.
Well, we're doing very good yields. That's all I know. And whether it's chemically aided or not, I suspect part of it is. But we're still doing much better than other farming countries across most of the rest of the world.
You
so
know what's
good.
Amazing to me about what Gwen just said is that when I married my wife 3 years ago in October, we decided for our honeymoon we would take a road trip.
Mm-hmm.
And we're gamblers.
Okay.
So we always knew we wanted to spend our honeymoon. We were gamblers and drinkers. We knew we wanted to spend our honeymoon in New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
So we decided to do it as a road trip. And we drove through Mississippi. And, my God, that state's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
It is.
I mean, just driving through that state, I was amazed at how gorgeous it was. I've never been through Mississippi or anything. It amazed me.
I tell you what, there's not many states. I can't think of a state I haven't touched in. One of my favorite places to go is Four Corners, out by Monument Valley and Chenille on the Lakota Hopi Reservation there.
I'm not smart enough to... Where is that, Gwen? What state?
That is Arizona, New Mexico, Colorado, and I think it's Nevada. It's four states.
Oh, okay.
All together. It's one of my favorite places, but anybody who's driven the coastline from San Francisco down to Los Angeles on the Pacific Coast Highway knows. I mean, I've driven in Switzerland, and it's gorgeous. And I've driven in other places, but that Pacific Coast Highway, it is
right. It's out of this world.
Oh,
beautiful.
The only place I've ever been to west is Las Vegas in San Diego when I visited, when me and my wife visited a brother-in-law. But I was amazed how I've never been to San Diego before.
No, that's beautiful,
I'm almost
too.
Amazed at how many people retire to Florida and Arizona. If mm-hmm. When I retire, I have every intention of going to San Diego.
Yeah.
The weather's beautiful. The beaches are beautiful.
Yeah.
And the best part is, Jack, you'll love this. He lived in La Jolla when he was teaching
at
UCSD. Yeah,
uh-huh.
he lived a half, like right down the street, you know, maybe a quarter mile from where Romney was building his house at the time
uh-huh.
of the election.
Yeah.
It's beautiful in La Jolla. I love the color of the water there, the ocean.
Oh, it's great.
It's very beautiful. And San Diego is nice, too. I mean, and Florida is, except now, we've been sacrificed by the corporations down here.
Now, Florida, I used to visit every New Year's. We used to go down to Melbourne.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I had a sister-in-law that used to live down there. And I don't know. I mean, Florida's nice. I don't like the weather. I don't like the weather, Gwen. I'm sorry. I hate humidity.
Yeah, it can be too tropical. I know there's a lot of folks. If I had my choices and druthers, and there was U.S. Postal Service, I would be living in Bimini. I like Bimini.
Now, Jack, I have been to International Falls, Minnesota.
No, it's cool.
We go to
there.
Canada every year for the fishing trip.
Oh, it's very, yeah. Well, it's a great place to go fishing, but you freeze your ass off in the wintertime.
I like the cold though.
No, you do well. Then
I love
the spot for you, my friend. It's very isolated. It's got just enough to avoid being like Alaska. It's got just enough of the sense of the mainland here to avoid being like Alaska. It's not
right.
as remote as some places, but it's definitely in its own category. There's no doubt about it. And it is brutally cold in certain parts of the winter.
I'm sorry, I just noticed the time, but one thing I'd like to talk to you guys about before the show wrapped up
mm-hmm.
is earlier it was mentioned about the voter ID laws.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the reason I want to talk about this is I am a co-author or whatever on that Man with the Muckrake blog that Wayne's on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I hate to admit it, and you guys might jump all over me, but I'm all for the voter ID laws. But I have a different idea on how we could go about that.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, obviously it's a problem for people, American citizens, that don't have IDs, photo IDs.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I heard on a radio program, probably Tom Hartman, because I love that dude.
Oh, he's
how
awesome.
Other postal services in other countries have, like, a bunch of different services. Like, some of them could even act as some sort of banking service.
Mm, okay.
Why can't we make the United States Post Office as some sort of a DMV where, because everyone gets mail.
Yeah.
So what would be the problem with implementing some sort of system where everyone could get an ID, a photo ID?
And relatively cheaply.
I know the conservatives will be all post office, post, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, to hell with them.
But I would say, you know what, let's do the photo ID. But now the United States Postal Service has the ability to provide photo IDs for a minimal charge, if any.
Mm-hmm. Minimal,
to every
right.
citizen in this country.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
good. I like that idea.
Do you know why it's not going to happen? Because there are companies that are doing their damnedest, and they have billions of dollars, and they want to drive the postal industry into a private company.
That's exactly what they're trying to do.
And it sickens me.
Oh,
and
me
it
too.
It sickens me as a union member, because that seems to be the fallback. They're unionized.
Mm-hmm.
What
right.
the hell's wrong with unions? Could I use bad
Nothing.
Language on this
Go ahead.
Service?
Be my guest.
Right.
I'm with you all the way.
How the fuck does anyone have a problem with unions?
Right.
We live in the United States of America. How the fuck do you have a problem with unions? How could any? And the funniest thing is, when I first started getting on the blogs, a bunch of conservatives started coming to my site, and I kind of started going with them because we had the whole anti-Obama thing going, but mine was for a different reason than theirs, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But, I mean, you know, how could you be against OSHA? How could you be against workplace safety?
Well, these people are crazy.
I don't get
They're
it.
Misled. they're wrong, period. And unions are good for people. It's when they get corrupt and self-serving, that's when they're bad. But the fact that they do deliver a higher wage for working people is to be is admirable and should be universal. I mean,
Jack, I make more money than any other tile setter in the world other
mm-hmm.
than San Francisco.
Right.
You know, I could actually
good.
Afford
I'm
to send my daughter
are.
To private school, and
good.
I could afford to pay for her college.
I'm glad you can. That's
awesome.
I mean,
awesome. What is wrong with that?
Nothing.
I mean,
nothing's wrong with that.
The American dream now seems to be we go to church, so we're going to vote against everything that's under our best interest because our God says that abortion's bad and this is bad and this is bad. And
well,
my kid's going to go off to the service because that's the only
mm-hmm.
way they could go to college.
Yeah, that's
and
terrible.
I don't get it.
Yeah,
I don't understand either.
It's very frustrating, and it's being fed by guys like the Koch brothers who are virulently anti-union, and they will pull out all the stops to label unions as bad and tar them as being horrible
right.
institutions
and
that
then,
they're going to bring down the economy
the
and everything else.
Here's the best part about the Postal Service.
The Koch brothers is one thing, but really who's very anti-union is right there in the heart of our democracy and our government, and that's Wall Street. They're anti-union.
Oh, big time.
You know,
they
amen.
Don't want any union.
Amen.
That's
and now our president is willing, our own president, our Democratic president, is willing to negotiate on lowering corporate taxes.
Yeah,
when
that's
we
bad.
Already have one of the lowest tax corporate tax rates in the world.
Well, you know,
it
isn't good enough to be a Democrat anymore. You've got to be a progressive. And if you're not, I'm sorry, you're a bought out toady.
That's
what
why,
you are.
Jack, that's why last week or the week before I posted that thing on the chat room. I mean, it is time to really start seriously thinking about a
yeah.
third party option.
Oh yeah.
I mean, the
yep.
national committees, they almost seem to control everything.
They do.
Sickens me.
Excuse me, gentlemen, have you been looking at the Green Shadow Cabinet and what it's been up to since the last election? I mean, the Green Party is a viable party, and it's basically they are doing a great deal of strategic work right now.
And they should.
And I hope it pays off for them.
And they're coming up with policy. Yeah, well, it won't pay off unless people begin to discuss them and support
right.
them. And you know what, gentlemen? It is the end of the show. John, I'm really happy you called in. Thank you for
John, I'm glad you called in, definitely.
I might have to call in next week, too. We might have
Please
to continue
do.
This.
Yeah, let's keep it going. I'm all for it, my friend.
Jack and Gwen, it was great talking to you on the phone.
Yes, great talking with you, too, and thanks for your input.
Thank you. And I'd also like to mention real quick, the United States Postal Service would be profitable if it wasn't for that guarantee on health insurance limitation bullshit.
Oh, that was such a bunch of crap.
Put on them.
Yeah,
the
Republicans snuck that into that 2006 bill, and it screwed them up.
I want to also thank our captain over there at Roundtree 7, who sponsors this show. David was in the chat room with us for this show. So, David, thank you for being there.
Yes, David.
And everybody, let's keep in mind the heart, the feeling, and the soul of Occupy Wall Street while this
right.
month comes, this new month comes up. So, we didn't have time for Dennis. Or popular resistance.
We'll do it next week.
We'll do
it. In the meantime, everybody keep pressing forward.
I'll be looking forward to it.
Sounds good.
And,
all right, bye, guys.
See you later.
Good night, John. And I want to thank you guys for being with me today. And, Jack, I want you to take care of yourself.
Oh, yeah. I'll be fine.
You aren't alone, brother. You are
yeah,
not.
Yeah, thank you.
And that is our show for this week. Thank you, people, for listening. And come back and listen to us again next Sunday. This has been The Sunday Show with Jack Jodell at Saturday Afternoon Post. And myself, Gwen Berry, and I write over at Roundtree 7. That's the number 7.com. And also visit us at daughtersofisis.com, the fragrant memories of our ancestors. That's it, this week's show. Jack, take care till next Sunday.
And you too, Gwen. Thank you for having me, and we'll talk next week. Thank you very much, everybody, and good night.